This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Bob Greenstein. We're, of course, talking about the Social Security and Medicare trustees reports. I'm going to go very quickly to introducing Paul Vandewater. I'm sure many of you are on tight deadlines. As you may know, before joining the Center in 2008, Paul, at various points, was Assistant Director of the Congressional Budget Office. He was Associate Commissioner of the Social Security Administration for Research, Evaluation, and Statistics, and later Assistant Deputy Commissioner of SSA for Policy. He's also been Vice President for Health Policy at the National Academy of Social Insurance, where he oversaw projects on Medicare. So one of, I think, Washington's leading experts on these issues. Paul will be conducting the briefing. We have two brief analyses in the form of statements, one on the Social Security part of the trustees report, one on the Medicare trustees report. Those two statements, each about 1.5 or 2 pages, nice and short, are being posted as we speak and will be on our website in a matter of minutes. Paul Vandewater.
Thanks, Bob. The trustees reports that have been released today confirm, as we've known for quite a while, that both the Social Security and Medicare programs face significant financial challenges. In fact, they both suggest that those financial challenges are at least slightly greater than were previously estimated. In both reports, the projected insolvency date of the relevant trust funds has been moved forward to some degree. In the case of Social Security, the combined trust funds are now estimated to be exhausted in 2036, 1 year earlier than was projected in last year's report. In the case of Medicare, the hospital insurance trust fund is now projected to become insolvent in 2024, fully 5 years earlier than was projected last year. In addition, in both cases, the long-run deficits of the two programs are slightly larger than was projected in the trustees' report last year. I might note that the reasons for those changes in the long-run deficit are slightly different in the cases of the two programs. For Medicare, the primary reason that the long-run hospital insurance deficit has increased is due to slightly worse experience in 2010 than the actuaries had previously projected. Income is slightly lower because of slightly deeper recession than was projected last year, and hospital insurance spending in 2010 turned out to be slightly higher than the trustees had previously estimated. Since those elements are now part of the base off of which future projections have made, those factors increase the HI deficit somewhat. In the case of Social Security, the deterioration in the long-run deficit is due to demographic and other factors, chiefly slightly lower mortality and immigration. In both cases, that is, both for Social Security and Medicare, it's important to note, however, without diminishing the significance of these changes, that the projections of the insolvency dates do move around, often by fairly significant amounts, from 1 year to the other. In the case of Medicare, for example, we have only to go back to a few years, to 2004 or 2005, to find that the projected year of insolvency for the Hospital Insurance Trust Fund was 2019 or 2020, even closer than is now being projected. Similarly, in the case of Social Security, you can go back and find similar exhaustion dates back in the late 1990s. Those comparisons, however, are somewhat deceptive because the long-run situation is measured by the 75-year deficit, we would have expected to have deteriorated substantially over the past decades because of the change in the valuation period. In fact, we've not had substantial deterioration. I'd also note that in both cases, that is both Social Security and Medicare, that the health reform legislation is continuing to make the projections better than they were prior to the enactment of health reform. The changes in the projections do not in any way reflect a reassessment of the effect of the health reform legislation. In the case of Social Security, taxable payroll is somewhat higher than projected prior to health reform because of the excise tax on high-cost health plans, which shifts, which is expected to shift compensation away from health benefits, which are not subject to tax, to wages, which are. And in the case of Medicare, we have both programs, savings, and higher revenues. Two other features I'd just like to note that are unique to the separate programs. In the case of Social Security, you will see in our statement that we compare, as we have done in the past, the size of the Social Security shortfall to the cost of extending the 2001 and 2003 tax cuts. According to our estimates, the revenue loss just from extending the tax cuts for people making over $250,000, the top 2% of Americans, would itself be almost as large as the entire Social Security shortfall. And the revenue loss from making all of the tax cuts permanent would be about three times the entire Social Security shortfall. You know, we make this point not to suggest that these tax cuts should be extended and used to pay for Social Security, but simply to point out that people, particularly some members of Congress, should not simultaneously claim that extending the tax cuts is affordable, whereas the Social Security shortfall constitutes a dire fiscal threat. In the case of the Medicare program, I'd like to comment briefly on the statement from the the Medicare actuary, who once again expresses concern that the projections of the savings from health reform might not be fully implemented. This is essentially a reiteration of the concern that the actuary has expressed for quite some time, including in last year's trustees report and in his estimate, cost estimate from the Affordable Care Act when it was enacted in early 2010. Even under the alternative projection, which the actuary prefers, the insolvency of the hospital insurance trust fund would still occur in 2024. That's not affected by this alternative projection. The 75-year shortfall would increase substantially to about a little over 2% of payroll compared to the roughly 0.8% of payroll under the trustees' official estimate. But nonetheless, it's important to note that even this would still be a dramatic improvement over what the trustees projected prior to the enactment of the Affordable Care Act. Clearly, despite the improvements made by through health reform, as I said at the beginning, Medicare continues to face significant long-term financial challenges, as does Social Security. Both programs are affected by the retirement of the baby boom generation. The first members of the baby boom are becoming eligible for Medicare this year. And in addition, of course, the growth of Medicare costs is also affected by continued increase in health care costs. Obviously, it will be important to make sure, to the extent possible, that the cost-saving provisions in the Affordable Care Act are implemented. The law provides an extensive list of demonstration and pilot projects that will test new approaches to delivering health care, and it will be important to implement the successful ones as quickly as possible. In the near term, however, before these efforts bear fruit, it will be difficult to achieve large additional reductions in Medicare expenditures without either shifting costs to beneficiaries or greatly reducing payments to providers, either of which approaches would endanger access to care for low and moderate income beneficiaries. So that extending the life of the HI Trust Fund beyond the projected insolvency date of 2024 will almost certainly require increases on both the revenue side and also further reductions in projected Medicare spending.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Read commentary from our experts at offthechartsblog.org. Find us on Twitter and Facebook, and create a My Center account at centeronbudget.org.